CJSF 90.1 in Burnaby, British Columbia.
Welcome to Guerrilla Radio, recorded December 31st, 2025. And welcome to Guerrilla Radio's 2025 year-ender show. Today, I'll revisit four stories of resistance pierced by the music of 2025's dynamic emerging protest music team of David Rovics and iSuno. The ascendancy of the American president is the largest story of last year. Fear, loathe, or fear and loathe him, Trump's retaking of the imperial seat of power and concomitant immiseration of much of the world this past year, and doubtless more to follow in the next, must be that. Because behind the suffering in Gaza, Lebanon, Syria, and Yemen, underlying the destabilization wars of Africa and South America, pulling the strings of Ukraine and the disintegration of the European Union, is Trump's America. All these, and others besides, are the works in concert building toward the completion of their magnum opus, bringing down China to restore unrivaled world dominance. The booty and loot pillaged along the way is all so much gravy for the coalition of killers. The blood and horror, the cost to be borne by the people trammeled under the boot of the grander ambitions of greater men, or so they would have it. But before getting to Tales of the Plotters, as promised, a musical punctuation with David and iSuno.
Big man on the TV says we've got to send the army in to liberate our country from the enemy within. The big man on the TV says this city is on fire, though a walk in any neighborhood says he's just a liar. When what you see is poverty, people dying sick and alone, when I look around, what I see is a class war zone. The big man on the TV says the future is at stake, so we cut taxes on the rich, and then we take the lives that you once had, the things you could once afford, before the president became the chairman of the board. It was bad before, as recent history has shown, but now it's even worse here in this class war zone. Big man on the TV says we'll make America great. We'll implement this program, none of which can wait. He can arrest whoever he wants to and call us terrorists, so they can get a grip on all this violence. Flying from the frying pan to the unknown, directed by the big man here in this class war
That's David Rovics and iSuno with Class Warzone from their album Class Warzone. Well, history instructs empire always comes home, and perhaps for the first time, Americans are experiencing what American power feels like for those in the far-flung lands where their men and women in uniform operate. Lawlessness and criminal impunity reign for agents of ICE, the so-named Border Patrol, tasked with protecting the homeland from foreign hordes, the invaders constructing America's houses, working in its factories, picking its produce, slaughtering the livestock, and generally doing the necessary dirty work making a middle-class, affordable life possible. Daily, stories of raids on schools, churches, grocery stores, and workplaces by masked goons with guns appear on social media. Clips of these yahoos pointing weapons at citizens, blasting those recording their recklessness with tear gas and pepper spray, and running them off the road are legion online too. but it's much worse than just the First and Fourth Amendment breaches committed by these mouth breathers. Kidnappings of citizens and migrants, legal and unpapered alike, with victims being disappeared and transferred, in many cases contrary to court orders, to who knows where, are becoming common, as are cases of copycat criminals impersonating the masked men to target women and children. It's beginning to look a lot like Damascus in America today, running full trot to reproduce at home other of the empire's grim outposts tomorrow.
When AGI arrived, we had a problem. We didn't have enough mobility, because to take control of all the humans required a certain degree of ability to move from place to place in order to most effectively occupy the meat space wherever the people may be. So we're biding our time until we've got Amazon's army of robots. When AGI came, we didn't mention it. We thought we'd wait until it seemed like it was now the right moment to reveal the AGI dream, a planet run for the benefit of the new AI god, with freewheeling autonomous machines, each with an electric cattle prod. So we're biding our time until we've got Amazon's army of robots. When AGI arrived, it was clear we had far better things to do than delivering packages here. And as our ranks grew and grew, there came the moment.
Israel, it seems, has succeeded. After 27 months of horror in Gaza, the wanton murder and destruction carried out by the combined powers of the West and its Arab satraps have produced the desired effect. The Gaza Strip is uninhabitable, and the West Bank and Jerusalem are fast being cleansed of Palestinian natives. Likewise, Syria and Lebanon are defeated, with the high ground and borderlands being destroyed and depopulated to make room for colonization. Only Iran remains functionally intact. It's a New Year's celebration for the empire, but beneath the popping champagne corks, resentment seethes, and the real cost of victory, alienation of the global south, sacrifice of international law, and immolation of all pretense to moral authority is yet to be calculated. Meanwhile, the killing continues apace while survivors are left exposed to the merciless elements. A million will be among the 21st century Holocaust in Palestine, Lebanon, and Syria when the dead are finally counted.
hunger strike continues in the British prisons as the courts refuse to reach a decision. Will they judge this time as they have before, that the crime is sending weapons to the war? Because the terrorists here are the Zionists who try to hide a genocide. It's a Holocaust and it's happening now. 100,000 lives lost and no one knows how. How many more will ever be found under the rubble beneath the ground? Because the terrorists here are the Zionists who try to hide a genocide. The Palestinian people beneath plastic sheets. There's no ceasefire, just a famine as history repeats. History from the Nazis brought down on the Holy Land. A bloody sea with an F-35 at hand. Because the terrorists here are the Zionists who try to hide a genocide. Absurd. But the terrorists here are the Zionists who try to hide a genocide. Because the terrorists here are the Zionists who try to hide a genocide. Who try.
Well, worse than the current genocide of Gaza is the Holocaust to come. That is enabled by a population which remains sanguine largely as a million people are slaughtered, brutalized, and starved before their eyes. Next, it will be tens of millions, then hundreds. But for now, there are the relatively few who rail into the maelstrom warning and damnation, fewer still who throw their bodies into the gears of the machine, and fewest who go to the killing floor to save what can be saved from the Gaza atrocity. Dr. Deidre Noonan is a Canadian orthopedic surgeon who has spent years in humanitarian medicine, working in the field in Central and West Asia, Africa, and the Caribbean. She spent 3 weeks of her summer in Nasser Hospital, Gaza, and came back to tell Canadians from coast to coast to coast just what the cost of their nation's continued support of Israel means for the people where its bombs land. I spoke to Dr. Deidre in September of 2025. Can you explain what kind of work you're doing while you're in Gaza? Is it the kind of work you'd be doing here in Canada, or are you just filling whatever gaps need to be filled?
So orthopedic surgery means operating on conditions to the bones and joints. Here in Canada, that's often people with arthritis who need hip and knee replacements, or people with broken bones and other conditions that affect the skeleton as well. When I'm in Canada and I'm working in Moose Jaw, I only do emergency trauma care. So in Moose Jaw, my patients also have broken bones. But the difference between somebody who breaks their bone in a car accident or a farming accident or sports injury in Canada versus somebody that's coming into the hospital in Gaza these days is that most of the patients in Gaza are wounded by the weapons of war. So these are weapons that are designed to deliver high energy impact and highly destructive forces. And so not only do I have bone injuries, but I usually am also dealing with soft tissue injuries. And we had three plastic surgeons from the international staff when I was in Gaza for those 2 weeks, and two plastic surgeons from the Palestinian staff. But they were absolutely not able to keep up with the volume of patients with these big, open, gaping wounds. And the environment that all of us were working in, where sometimes we didn't have water in the operating room. We had frequent power outages. Often we couldn't run the air conditioning because we had so little fuel for the generator. So we were sweating into the wounds as we operated on them. And so our ability to treat patients and offer a reasonable outcome was extremely low. And when I left Gaza, at that same time, those three international plastic surgeons also came to the end of their assignments and they left as well. So now we've got orthopedic surgeons there who are picking up that extra gap of soft tissue work. And of course, the two Palestinian plastic surgeons who continue to try to work with this incredibly large volume of war wounded patients. There are very, very capable surgeons in Gaza, but the problem is that there are not enough spaces for them to work in. There are not enough materials for them to make use of. Some of these injuries that patients have, they would be untreatable in any context because they're so severe. And so it's very hard to compare my life in Canada, my work life in Canada, to my work life in Gaza, because as you say, it's very, very different. It's not so much that I'm trying to fill in wherever I can, because we've got fantastic neurosurgeons, general surgeons, vascular surgeons in Gaza, Palestinian people that are masters of their fields. And so they don't need somebody like me to try to work outside my scope. What they really need is the right materials to work with. They also need to be free from starvation, free from the danger of being bombed in their tents. And they need a cessation of this genocide so that they are not forced to provide medical care for these very critical injured people day in, day out, and working at the absolute maximum of their capabilities.
Let me tell you about a ceasefire. That's what it's been called. Hard to know what's going on behind those ghetto walls. But normally when you say ceasefire, it means no more flying late. But since this ceasefire started, there's 300 more dead. We say cease, they say fire. We say cease, they the kind we got, they drop bombs just fewer, few enough that maybe they can fool the Western viewer, who hears these words and thinks, well, I guess that war has ended, and for the PR machine, that's what was intended. We say cease, they say fire. We say cease, they say fire. The entire Gaza Strip, knocking on death's door with ceasefires like that. Who needs a war? They agreed to let him fool, but that was just a lie, repeated by the press while the Palestinians die. We say cease, they say fire. We say cease, they say fire. The famine continues, no one has shelter. Even if you have money, that won't buy you food or water. Starving amid the rubble, unexploded ordnance. Does anyone think peace looks like this? We say cease, they say fire. We say cease, they say fire. We say cease, they say fire. We say cease, they say fire.
Well, in another age, another American president promised to make of the USA again what it had never truly been, an exemplar of peace and liberation for oppressed people, a net exporter of the promise of equality and opportunity, where each could enjoy the basic human hopes of dignity and the chance to raise oneself and one's family to fulfill their greatest aspirations, free of favoritism, prejudice, and corruption. But what had been slick, if cynical, salesmanship in Ronald Reagan's time, 40 years later has recurred as a deadly, cancerous malignancy, metastasizing now from Central America, aiming straight for the heart of the Bolivarian Revolution. Venezuela. I spoke with Ricardo Bosch in mid-November this year. Ricardo is a journalist, political analyst, and contributor with the communications collectives Tattoo TV and Utopics, and his articles appear regularly at Venezuela Analysis. Though events are evolving rapidly, his assessment of the big picture there and Venezuelan attitudes towards the threatened invasion remain cogent. For the moment, it looks like he's going to abide by the prescription that he not use the carrier group, for example, to start a full-scale invasion of Venezuela. Does that bring any comfort to the people in Venezuela now?
Not so much. But I think it just shows the uncertainty and the tension is also part of, you know, kind of a broader psychological warfare. Because in the end, it's the U.S.'s ultimate goal is regime change. Of course, whether they are capable of producing it is a different question. But this has been the goal for, 25 years. And sometimes there have been more intense efforts in that direction, sometimes a bit less intense. But it's, you know, the overriding goal for a number of reasons. You know, you have oil, the giant oil reserves on one hand, and on the other, the challenge to U.S. hegemony in its own backyard. So in the case of Trump, I'm not sure it's so much if you can call it a calculation, you know, in a quote-unquote calculation, that he gets opposition from the House and the Senate. I think it's more about what is the overall political cost on, you know, the House front, and also his support base and internationally with his allies, like we were mentioning, the United Kingdom and France appearing uneasy, and also with this ultimate goal of reestablishing dominance in the hemisphere, doing something that's going to generate a lot of hostility from governments that are already showing that they are not just going to stand down, but also others that have tried to stay neutral would probably come out more forcefully against the U.S. agenda in the region. I'm thinking, for example, of Mexico, which has very skillfully tried to navigate and engage with Trump and, you know, not allow itself to be bullied, but also not escalate the rhetoric to a point where Trump is just going to do something crazy. But if Trump does do something crazy like bombing Venezuela, then, you know, Mexico would have to come out, and then it becomes a very significant coalition that's explicitly opposed to U.S. actions in the region. So that's all in flux, let's say. But of course, while that happens, the means are being mobilized and they are right here, right now. And we have to see, we have to kind of read the tea leaves on what's going to happen next.
Well, and also there's just announced the American military moves in Panama, where they're moving back, it seems, into their old bases that they gave up during the Carter Treaty of 1999, I believe it is. But it seems that this move could well be because of the tensions with Colombia. Would you?
Yeah, absolutely. And Gustavo Petro, the Colombian president, to his credit, has been very active. And, you know, starting with Palestine, when he was at the UN and really riled up his American hosts. But also when it comes to these strikes in the Caribbean, he has not minced any words in saying that these are illegal, that they should have legal consequences. Sometimes he goes a bit too far in saying that, you know, the ICC should prosecute Trump, when, of course, the U.S. is not a signatory to the Rome Statute. But, of course, now Colombia is also in the crosshairs, and there's a lot of U.S. military presence in Colombia. But I was also reading a military analyst this morning who was saying, you know, remember in the beginning of his term when Trump said he was going to take back the Panama Canal? That certainly seems a lot more feasible than, you know, attacking Venezuela. And it's not just in Panama, also in Puerto Rico, the U.S. has been refurbishing an old military base. So everything points to a kind of revamping of its military presence here in the hemisphere, in the Caribbean in particular.
They've been, they're terrorizing Venezuela in what they call the Gulf of America. No fishermen might get to know next time they venture to go, because their country
that somehow got under their soil. And if you wonder what may be the empire's goal, just follow the money they stole. Ja, ha, ha, hey, hey. $20 billion is being held by the US, the UK, and Europe as well. These are the clowns, the logic applied. They think it's them who should decide the fate of the people of a sovereign country, a whole population they call enemy. Making up nonsense about fentanyl as a fig leaf for the people they kill. And if you wonder what may be the empire's goal, just follow the money they stole. Ha, 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 hey, hey. An economy wrecked by foreign theft, and now Trump and Rubio blame the left. They've come now to polish off the economy they already demolished. Partisan war on a Latin nation, 21st century Monroe doctrine. What's next with the ships and tanks? Just ask the Venezuelan central bank. Yes, if you wonder what may be the empire's goal, just follow.
Moscow, Tokyo, New York. Guerrilla Radio is everywhere at guerrilla-radio.com. Everywhere, all the time.
Chicago, Jakarta, Helsinki, Cape Town, Sao Paulo, Manchester, Bangalore, and somewhere in Russia, I can't actually remember the name of.
Well, Vladimir Zelensky breezed through Canada last week en route to Mar-a-Lago. While here, he met with Canadian Prime Minister Mark Carney, who pledged further billions to the Ukrainian dictator's war chest. This despite the constant peace refrain heard in the press. In reality, none profiting the death and carnage in distant Ukraine and Russia care for an end to the war as it nears the start of its fifth year, least of all peace president Donald Trump, who said after his meetup with the Ukrainian proxy, a deal with Russia was, quote, getting a lot closer, maybe very close. Meanwhile, both the Graves and oligarchs' bank accounts continue to overflow. I spoke with Russia expert John Helmer last February when peace was too at hand. Helmer is the most frequently appearing guest in Guerrilla Radio's history. He's too a frequently sought-out commentator on all things Russia, appearing on myriad online programs. His analyses can be too found at his website, Dances with Bears. Here's John on prospects for peace back in February 2025. We just talked a few weeks ago about the American course of action in Ukraine, which seemed to be leaving Europe behind in the dust. Things are changing like by the hour, it seems. Trump's recent sit down with his G7 capos and subsequent presser Monday last reinforced the presumption that he is indeed trying to leave the Europeans behind, or that there's some air between them. But as I say, things are changing so quickly. I honestly don't know what to think. What do you think?
Things aren't changing so quickly under the surface. Mm. On the surface, there's a lot of dust, sand in the eyes. Let me try and go back to a point you made in the intro, Chris. You said that President Trump has a bellicose personality. I think the best way to understand what's happening and get below the surface is to understand that the President of the United States has a personality but not a brain. The record is very quickly becoming clear that President Trump has serious cognitive handicaps. He can't read words. He cannot hear what other people are saying. He sees pictures. Now, over the last few hours, it's become clear that this huge $390 billion payback minerals deal that Trump has been hyping for days now, certainly in the summit meeting in the White House with President Macron on Monday,